You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow, what a big news day. The Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, as we speak, and we're keeping an eye on the news screens here, because, you know, it could come down any day, now, any minute now. Certainly the questions, or maybe tomorrow, I mean, we'll see, or even later than that. But the arguments, the oral arguments were today before the Supreme Court, and in the Pennsylvania voter suppression ID laws that could cause as much as half of the city of Philadelphia, the place where the Declaration of Independence was signed, not to be able to vote. Right. You think Thomas Jefferson's rolling over in his grave? Ben Franklin, that, you know, had made Philadelphia his home after he fled Massachusetts as a teenager because he was so horrified by the theocracy there that they were still burning women at the stake, or actually they were hanging them in Massachusetts more frequently. It's just incredible. So, by the way, let me add, we need a national right to vote law. I find the right to vote in the Constitution 5-6 times, but the Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore said there is no federal right to vote, at least for the presidency. You only have the right to, well, you don't even have the right to vote for electors. So they said that there's no right to vote. Let's put it into law. Let's put it in the Constitution. Meanwhile, unrest has spread to Yemen and Syria. And it's probably going to be a lot worse tomorrow. The U.S. State Department is advising Americans in this whole range of Middle Eastern countries to be very careful tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday's Friday prayers. And a lot of the mullahs who are, you know, running the prayer shows, you know, who are preaching the gospel, as it were, are pretty upset with us. Or at least pretty upset with whoever put together this video, this movie. Now we've got actors who are in the movie coming out saying, I didn't know what the movie was. I'm horrified by this. I had no idea. It's kind of a stretch. I mean, typically, if you're going to act in something, aren't you given a script? Maybe these people were only given a partial script. I don't know. This is a story that is slowly unwinding. We still don't even know who this guy is who posted the trailer on the internet that started all this. What is becoming increasingly obvious are two things. One, Mitt Romney, by trying to politicize the death of four American diplomats, really put his foot in it. And he did it right after Sarah Palin told him he needs to start getting really aggressive and hit Obama hard. And so he did. You know, he used a lie, but he did. He you know, in the Fox of Fear, I mean, I watched Fox News last night for almost an hour, and I'm here to tell you, Shana was going, ow, ow. It was incredible because they just had person after person after person on there defending Romney, saying, well, yeah, of course he had to say, you know, we shouldn't apologize for America, quack, 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 you know, all this kind of stuff. In fact, there was no apology. The embassy in Egypt, before the protests started, when there was just a buzz that the protests were coming, the embassy in Egypt released this press release saying that, you know, this was released, by the way, by a press official there. The actual diplomat or ambassador wasn't even in Egypt. She was here in the United States on home leave. And so, you know, you got a bunch of people who are stuck there, and you know, these things get released all the time. It wasn't vetted by the White House or even the State Department. And so they released this press release that said, you know, we don't agree with anybody trashing anybody's religion. Now, this was before the attacks. So Mitt Romney chose to claim that that press release that was released before there was even a protest out in front of the Egyptian embassy was actually what Obama said in response to the violence in Libya, which is just a bald-faced lie. And one of the things I find most amazing is not only did Fox News spend, you know, I'm assuming, you know, all day defending. They certainly spent the hour that I watched last night defending it. And not pointing out that he was lying. He was lying about the order in which events took place, and he was lying about what the memo said. I frankly agree with the memo. I don't think that it's an American value to trash people's religions. Or lack of religions, for that matter. Somebody wants to be an atheist or somebody wants to be a Catholic. It doesn't matter. That should not be the business of our government. And if people in the United States want to trash other people's religions or, you know, one religion, you know, I don't think it's inappropriate for our government to say, you know, that's not what we're all about. If you want to take this issue up, take it up with, you know, Terry Jones, not with us. Terry Jones, by the way, Pastor Terry Jones, the wackadoodle down in Florida, he's been on this program, who had his Burn a Quran Day, and now he's got his Judge Muhammad Day. He's got this little congregation with maybe 30 people in it down in Florida, but he gets all his national press because he does these outrageous things to upset Muslims. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff called him personally last night, and because Terry Jones was planning on showing this movie in his church this weekend, and said, please don't show the movie. It is pornographic. And Terry Jones said to the Washington Post, well, if it's pornographic, I won't show it. He didn't say he wouldn't show it. So he gets to decide what's pornography and what isn't. So we'll see where that goes. So anyhow, it's, you know, what this is all showing us, as I said, is two things. One is that Mitt Romney is a craven political opportunist who's willing to lie and who was dancing to Sarah Palin's tune. I mean, Sarah Palin had gone on Fox the day before telling Romney explicitly, you've got to start hitting Obama. And for 2 days, he was using her as his foreign policy advisor. Now, today, he's not mentioning that memo. He's not lying about it anymore. He's just stopped talking about it. But the buzz is still going. I mean, you got Republicans going, is this the end of it for Romney? And then the other thing that we've learned is that democracy's messy. I mean, the President Morsi, the president of Egypt, is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, he's an Islamist. And he's dancing this very delicate. I mean, this has got to be the guy with more sweat on his brow than anybody else in the Middle East right now, because he's the second largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid. He's the country that has a peace treaty with Israel. And yet his party is calling for more demonstrations on Friday. And he's got to figure out, you know, which way is he going to go? And we don't know. And the president last night in Telemundo came right out and said, we don't know if Egypt is an ally right now or not. We don't think that they're an enemy. But their behavior is going to demonstrate whether or not they're an ally. And President Obama called President Morsi and said, you know, you got to protect our embassies, our people. You got to do something. This is not acceptable to us. Meanwhile, over in Libya, increasingly, it looks like it was just a small band of leftover, probably al-Qaeda's, or somebody who had a grudge, who went in and killed our four diplomats. That this was not the action of the crowd. This was the action of a small group of people who were ready for this. They had stolen these weapons when the government fell. They had built up their own armory. They came in with rocket-propelled grenades, you know, with death on their minds. And this is what they did. And Obama and Libya is going after them. And what with the Libyan people, what did they do? They came out with signs apologizing for the violence and praising Christopher Stevens, praising our diplomats. That's pretty amazing, really, when you think of it. Romney didn't talk about that either.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So more on this and the rest of the news of the day. Oh, Chris Hedges and Daniel Ellsberg just had an incredible victory. I'll tell you about that right after this. Okay, here's what happened with Chris Hedges. He's going to be on our TV show tonight, by the way. Chris Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, Noam Chomsky, and a few others sued the federal government, the United States government, specifically, I guess, the Obama administration, you know, largely that is the federal government, and over the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, which authorizes the president to authorize the indefinite detention without trial and without charges of anyone who has been found to be palling around with terrorists, to use Sarah Palin's phrase. I mean, obviously the language is far more technical than that, but... And the argument that Hedges and Ellsberg in particular made as journalists was that if we're going to cover a story, let's say we're going to cover a story of what, you know, something that's going on in the Middle East, and we go over to Iraq or to Egypt, well, you got to talk to the people who are on our side, the people who like us, but you also have to talk to the people who are trying to kill us. If you're a reporter, if you have an opportunity to interview, you know, the number three guy in Al-Qaeda, go for it. Right, that's what reporters do. People want to know what he has to say. And I guarantee you it's a he, by the way. And so, you know, if you did this as a journalist under the NDAA, Chris Hedges could be put in prison for the rest of his life without ever having a trial and without ever having being able to appeal it or, you know, nothing. Complete blowing up of due process. And federal judge Catherine Forrest struck down this provision and said, sorry, this is not constitutional. Now, of course, the Obama administration is appealing this, and this is probably going to end up before the Supreme Court. We'll see how it goes. But there's just so much in the news. It's really quite remarkable. This idea that has been promoted since Ronald Reagan, that we need to help the rich, and if we help the rich, they will help all the rest of us. And it was the rationale. I mean, this was the Laffer curve. Remember Art Laffer? He sat down in a restaurant and drew it on the back of a napkin, and suddenly it's federal policy. It's tax policy. It's law. The 74% income tax we had on people who earned over $1 million a year. Now, you didn't pay 74% on, you know, the first 500,000, 600,000, 800,000, 900,000 a year, but after you started earning $1 million a year, after that point, that income was taxed at a 74% rate when Ronald Reagan came into office and during the Carter administration and during the Nixon administration and the Ford administration. They all thought that was just fine. During the Johnson administration, during the Kennedy administration, they all thought that was just fine, 74%. Actually, during the Kennedy administration, it was 91%. He thought that was fine. He suggested it should be lower, the loopholes should be closed, but he didn't accomplish it. That was LBJ who did it. And, of course, you know, the Republican Dwight Eisenhower and his Vice President Richard Nixon, they thought it was fine. Nixon never tried to cut that top tax rate, even when he became president. But Reagan cut it, saying this is going to help the economy. So finally somebody did a study. They went into a state. You know, a lot of states have been cutting taxes on rich people over the last couple of years, especially since Republicans have been taking, like, entire states. They take the governorship, they take the whole legislature, with all this billionaire money coming into the states, they have, you know, like Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, well, maybe not Illinois, you got a good Democrat as governor there, but Florida. State after state after state has basically become all Republican. Now, I think it's going to be an enormous amount of buyer's remorse in this election. We will see. But they pulled this thing off, and one of the things that they did in many of these states is they cut taxes on rich people. So economist, Owen Zidar, he says, okay, let's look at this. And what he found was that when you cut taxes for the top 10% of wage earners, now the top 10% is like anybody making over about $150,000 a year. Maybe even a little less than that. Maybe it's anything over $100,000. When you cut taxes for them, you get less than 0.1% increase in GDP. But if you cut taxes for the bottom 90%, in other words, you put more money in the pockets, in the paychecks of people making under $70,000, $80,000 a year, when you cut taxes for those people making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, you know, $25,000 the median income in the United States, $45,000 the median household income. Households typically have two or three wage earners in them these days. When you cut taxes on those people, you see a 3% increase in GDP. Now, I would submit to you that you could take that logic a step further and say, well, okay, we don't have to cut taxes on those people. That's not the most efficient way to put money in their paycheck, in their pockets. Let's increase their paychecks. Let's increase the minimum wage. You've got you've got 10 million people or tens of millions of people in the United States who are earning the minimum wage or within $3 of it. Jack that minimum wage from $7 and change up to $10 at like it was in the 1960s, you know, inflation adjusted to 1964 when the economy was just rip-roaring hot. Raise the minimum wage to $10 and everybody in the bottom two-fifths is going to see a raise in their pay. They're going to spend more money because they spend 100% of their paychecks. And you're going to see your economy grow. You don't have to cut taxes. Raise their pay. It's really simple stuff. And anybody who says, you know, I can't afford to hire people for anything more than $8 an hour, doesn't deserve to be running a business. That's insane. Unless, I mean, you know, if it's a lawn mowing service and they're hiring high school kids, okay, I get it. That's fine. But real work? $7.25? No. So, anyhow, this is what they learned, is that when you cut taxes for rich people like Mitt Romney, they put their money in Swiss bank accounts and in Cayman Islands accounts. When you or they put their money in the stock market, and you see this bubbles form in the stock market. When you cut taxes on working people, they spend their money in the economy, and the economy grows, and everybody makes more. It's time to say Reaganomics was a sham, and the only thing trickle-down economics produces is a nation of peons.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So we've got a variety of things here on the table today. A lot of things going on. We're going to have a couple of guests on some of these topics as the day continues. We'll pick up your calls right after this. Oh, one last thing I forgot to mention. The Fed has announced that QE3 is going to boogie. They're going to buy $85 billion worth of bonds, particularly mortgage-backed securities, which is going to help the housing market. It's going to make it easier for people to get their homes financed or refinanced. And they're guaranteeing that until 2015, they're going to keep an easy money policy, which means basically whoever is president in the next term is going to preside over either a bubble inflating or a growing and a steadily growing and strong economy. I'm more inclined to think of it as a bubble, but you know, I could be wrong. We will see. Meanwhile, inflation jumped, but it jumped not core inflation didn't jump. The main jump was in energy, food, and pharmaceuticals. But the headline in the Financial Times: U.S. wholesale prices in sudden surge, coming out the same day that the Fed announces that they're going to do, you know, monetary easing. I'm sure has all the right wing talk show hosts hysterical, because the Republicans are really upset about what the Fed is doing, because it's going to help the economy. It's going to lower unemployment. The Fed was created with two mandates. One is to control inflation, to keep it low, to keep it below 3%. And the other is to keep unemployment low, presumably below 6%. And they have not done that. In fact, you know, one of the questions being asked in the Financial Times is, you know, the Fed is looking at 8.1% unemployment and saying, this is horrible. We got to do something about this. Are they going to try and take it down to 7 or 6%? And by the way, most of this is not going to kick in before the election. So this is going to inure to the benefit of whoever is the next president or whoever is president in 2013. So we live in very interesting. I mean, you know, they should have done this 6 months ago. We live in very interesting times, my friends. Very interesting times. Cheyenne, is that how you say it in Long Beach, California?
Yeah, Cheyenne.
Cheyenne, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to talk about the fact that Mitt Romney and the Republicans are right out in front of the cameras and accuse the president of being sympathetic to the enemies and the people that attacked us.
Right.
But I just wanted to also, I'm looking at the Constitution, says treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort.
Right.
So, in essence, what they're accusing the president is treason.
Yes.
This is the same president that killed Osama bin Laden, decapitated mostly all of Al-Qaeda, but then they turn around and accuse the president of treason.
Well, not only that, you know, let's look back to the election of 1980 when Ronald Reagan was running against Jimmy Carter and the Iranians had taken the hostages.
Kissinger them held on to the hostages.
Yeah, now let me just read you a quote. This is from Ronald Reagan when he was running for president against Jimmy Carter when Carter sent in those helicopters that failed and you know, busted up in the desert. And it was a terrible, terrible foreign policy disaster for the president of the United States. So it was a horrible day. What did Ronald Reagan say? He said, quote, "This is a difficult day for all of us Americans. It is a time for us to stand united. It is a day for quiet reflection when words should be few and confined essentially to our prayers." What did George Herbert Walker Bush say, who was, you know, running for vice president at that time? He said, "I unequivocally support the president of the United States. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it certainly is not a time to try to go one up politically. He made it a difficult and courageous decision." End of quote.
And that's correct.
When Ronald Reagan and Bush Sr. look like diplomats, look like senior statesmen compared to Mitt Romney, the world is getting bizarre.
Yeah, but for them to accuse the president of treason,
that's
so over the top and ridiculous. I mean,
well, there's a reason why he did it, Shan. And here's the reason. Play this clip, Shano. This is the reason why Romney did it.
Should Mitt Romney go after Barack Obama more in a more personal way? Should he use words like incompetent, dangerous, socialist, those kinds of buzzwords that would get an enormous amount of attention? It would lock people in.
Well, and
should
they're not
he do that?
Just buzzwords. Those
Palin.
Are accurate descriptions of
so
our
you
commander
say, yes,
in
he
chief.
Should do that.
Yes,
yeah.
He should be very aggressive, and he should be adamant in his attacks on Obama's record, which is so dismal.
And, you know, she continues on with her rant. And basically, that was, you know, 2 days before Romney came out and said this. He was listening to Sarah Palin. She was his foreign policy advisor.
But let me ask you this: should not the media call that exactly what it is? They are accusing the president of the United States of treason.
Sure.
By definition of the Constitution, they accuse the president of a treasonous action.
Yeah, I do not disagree with you at all, Shannon. And it is wrong, and it is anti-American. It is un-American. It is fundamentally un-American. It's something that not even Ronald Reagan or George Herbert Walker Bush, or probably George W. Bush, would have done. It's something, you know, that most Republicans are condemning Romney for, and Romney has quit talking about. Absolutely. Jason in Washington, D.C. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to comment that I think both people are wrong in the situation. The statements that should have come out was that we wasted $1 billion liberating Libya. That's a complete, you know, counter to what we're doing, because in the long run, actually, Libya was, you know, let's call it, saved for whatever reason, basically because of banking interest. Everybody seems to forget that Libya had $65 billion in sovereign wealth funds that under Gaddafi, after he became a good guy, you know, Tony Blair, under the guise of J.P. Morgan, went over there and tried to scoop up some of the money to manage for Western banks. And when Gaddafi lost all this money, suddenly he decides, hey, I don't want to participate in this petrodollar trade. Mm-hmm. And this is what spurred this whole thing. All this thing about democracy and all this other stuff in Libya, it was all about the banks, because the rebels, about 3 or 4 weeks into the event, took a time out from their fighting to form a bank so that they can do oil transactions.
Right.
So there's a lot of this stuff here going on that everybody gets. It's kind of like the terrorists. You know, they're after us for our freedom, but everybody seems to forget it was because we had U.S. troops stationed in Saudi Arabia, the Holy
Land. Right.
So I blame both parties for this, because they're not saying the right thing, which has to do with we're putting our nose in places we shouldn't. We should have taken $1 billion and maybe built 1,000 liquid natural gas stations around the country so that all the 18-wheelers can run off our own domestic natural gas and help free us up from foreign oil.
Yeah, yeah. That you know, what you're talking about, who's that crazy billionaire? T. Boone Pickens. Yeah, that was the Pickens plan,
right.
Was convert all the 18-wheelers to natural gas, convert all the cars to electricity, or at least 80% of the fleet, And because 80% of people don't drive more than 50 miles a day, and you can easily go 50 miles in an electric car these days. I mean, you can go 100 miles easily in an electric car.
Yeah, and what is essentially, I go back to Wesley Clark's interview where he talked about, you know, around 9/11, him seeing the plans, and he said something that we saw all of these things. We're going to do Libya, then we're going to go to Egypt, then we're going to go to Syria, then we're going to do Iran. And I'm like sitting here and I'm like, I'm under the impression that both political parties, no matter who you put in, you think things are changing, but they're not. Because the big tip off to me was the fact that Obama was supposed to clean up Wall Street, and the five largest banks have created $230 trillion worth of derivatives, which have increased 39% under Obama, where the taxpayer is on the hook. Yeah. So all of the stuff we're talking about here, you know, money.
Well, if you look at the legislation that got passed, that does regulate the banks. The problem is that it needs implementing legislation. Dodd-Frank requires a second. You know, Dodd-Frank created all these frameworks, and one of them was to actually regulate derivatives, and then Congress has to vote to fund the agency that's going to do the work. And the Republicans Congress have absolutely blocked any efforts to do that. So, you know, I'm not.
We had the House and the Senate.
We had the House and the Senate for 2.5 months.
And they couldn't have. I mean, that's like.
And they couldn't do everything. No, they couldn't. And the reason that they couldn't do anything was because you still had Senate rules that said that the various senators could put individual bills on hold and simply say, no, we're not going to consider these. And that happened.
I'm very thankful you're talking about this thing with the NDAA, but let's not forget Carl Levin let it slip out that the administration specifically requested that Americans be included in this bill. Yeah. So the president signed a law that stripped Americans of their civil.
No, I don't, Jason, disagree with you at all on the NDAA, and I'm really glad that Chris Hedges won that thing. But if the end point of what you're saying is that we should have some kind of purity test, right, that we should be looking at the president and saying, you know, he doesn't do everything right. He's not progressive enough for us. Then I want you to think back to 1980. I remember 1980. Jimmy Carter had gone moderate, right? Jimmy Carter deregulated the trucking industry in 1978. He deregulated the air travel industry in 1979. Louise and I started a travel agency in 1983 as a result of that deregulation and built it from nothing up to a $6 million business in 3 years. I mean, there was a lot of opportunity as a consequence of that deregulation, but what happened ultimately was, you know, that travel agency that we built just recently got sold to a giant multi-billion-dollar corporation. We sold it after 5 years. But the point is that Carter was in the process of making us energy independent. Reagan came in and did away with that. Carter was in the process of putting together a deal between the Palestinians and the Israelis. He would have made it happen. He damn near got there. Reagan put an end to that. Carter was in the process of supporting union workers. Reagan's first action was to bust up PATCO. He put an end to that. Carter was strengthening our laws that protected the commons and that protected the safety of people. Reagan put an end to that. So, you know, progressives, you know, Ted Kennedy primarying Jimmy Carter, and progressives sitting around saying, Jimmy Carter, he's not good enough for me. That gave us Ronald Reagan, which gave us 32 years of the destruction of America.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So do you really want to sit around and tell me that, well, you know, President Obama isn't perfect enough for me. He hasn't passed the purity test, so I'm not going to vote for him. No, don't even try. Take you back to mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Stacey Davis-Gates on the line with us, legislative coordinator for the Chicago Teachers Union. Hey, Stacey.
Hey, how are you?
Just great. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I understand that the CTU, the Chicago Teachers Union, has something planned for this weekend.
Oh, my goodness. We're having a Wisconsin-style rally Saturday at Union Park here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. We're anticipating thousands of people. I think it's going to be absolutely one of the largest displays of solidarity this country has ever seen.
That's marvelous. How are the negotiations going with the Emanuel administration?
Well, what we're saying now is that they're finally negotiating and not trying to talk us out of going on strike or stopping the strike.
Right.
So they're negotiating it. You know, there's a clear difference between those two tactics. One tactic is to scare you and make you think that you shouldn't go on strike, and the other one is to actually get a contract done.
Right.
And right now they're working on a contract.
Yeah. Well, that's really great. And so the take-home message for our listeners is, if you're in the Chicago area, and we have a lot of listeners in Chicago,
if you're in the Chicago area or if you're in the Midwest, come out to Union Park noon on Saturday. We're anticipating, like I said, thousands of people, Wisconsin style rally. We think that this is going to be the largest that we've seen in terms of labor in a very long time. So we're excited about it.
That is great. Stacey Davis Gates, the legislative coordinator for the Chicago Teachers Union. Stacey, thanks for dropping by and sharing the story with us.
Well, thank you for, you know, keeping your listeners updated and your support. We appreciate it.
It is an honor. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. Thank
Good
you.
Good talking with you. Donald in Aurora, Illinois. Hey, Donald, welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Something doesn't seem to be right. Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. I'm listening.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Yeah, I'm listening. I'm here.
Hello?
Apparently you can't hear me. Can you hear
Hello?
Me?
Hello? No, okay. Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I find certain things to be very suspicious, and I don't mean to be a person that doesn't trust anything, but it's just the timing of this whole thing. You know, they made a movie called 2016 that it's all lies about Obama.
Right.
What's to say that some party, and I won't mention any party names, some party over here decided to put this film together, put it on the internet or whatever, and create this problem.
In other words, you're suggesting that this whole thing is the Republicans' October surprise in September?
Say that again.
Are you suggesting the October surprise? Every presidential election, the question is who's going to come up with the October surprise? The thing that they're going to try and do to that's going to hurt the other side. And, this goes back to LBJ ending the war at Vietnam in October of 1968. And he had it all figured out, and Nixon blew it up. But are you saying that this is an October surprise, that this is basically something that's being done to try and swing the presidential election to make President Obama look bad?
Well, I didn't know anything about it, any surprise, but I'm thinking that maybe the Republican Party's behind it somehow.
Yeah. Nothing would surprise me these days, Donald. I mean, the Republicans now, we know for a fact, blew up the peace negotiations with the Vietnamese in 1968, and Lyndon Johnson called Everett Dirksen, called that treason, said Nixon was committing treason. We know that for a fact. We have pretty good evidence, and thanks for the call, Donald. We have pretty good evidence that during when Reagan was running against Carter, that his campaign manager, Bill Casey, actually was negotiating with the Iranians to hold the hostages. You have the LBJ clip? Yeah, this is Lyndon Johnson. I mean, this just came out like a year and a half, 2 years ago. We've only known this a short time that Nixon committed treason in 1968. Lyndon Johnson had actually negotiated peace with the Vietnamese halfway through what we call the Vietnam War in 1968. He had negotiated peace, and Nixon went in and said, no, you guys wait, Madam Tu, don't go to the peace table, and I'll give you a better deal, and I'll make you rich. And this is how Lyndon Johnson responded.
Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And that he says that you must hold out.
Can you pause
just
that
hold on until I...
Now, the reason I pause it is just to make sure that you realize that the person that Lyndon Johnson is talking to was Senator Everett Dirksen, the leading Republican in the United States Senate, a statesman, a genuine statesman. Here he is, and back to Lyndon Johnson.
And he says that you must hold out. Just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to them out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
That's right.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
Yeah, this is treason. I know. I mean, you get this? This is the president of the United States talking about his opponent, Richard Nixon, committing treason. Lyndon Johnson went to his grave with that secret. So the election of 68 was stolen by Nixon or blown up. I mean, had peace happened, Hubert Humphrey absolutely would have won the presidency. You wouldn't have had riots at the Democratic convention in Chicago. And, you know, none of that would have happened. He would have been the hero. And then you got Reagan blowing up Carter's deal. And then you got George Bush getting appointed by the Supreme Court. And in large part because his brother had knocked 80,000 African Americans off the voting rolls in 2000, you know, before the election, which is what the Republicans are doing again. Please name for me, other than Dwight Eisenhower, any Republican since World War II who legitimately won an election for president of the United States. I don't think he can do it. I mean, it's conceivable that you could say George Herbert Walker Bush, although he was still covering up the fact that he was involved in Iran-Contra too. He knew what was going on. There was a crime committed by the, you know, a major traitorous act committed by the previous administration. So, you know, what's the Romney administration up to, or the Romney campaign up to? I wouldn't put anything past him. We have seen Republicans do this before, repeatedly. I wouldn't put any, and we know that they're trying to suppress the Democratic vote. I mean, that's going to the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania as we speak. So we shall see how this plays out. We shall see how this plays out. Stick around. We'll be back with Tom Hayden coming up in the next round. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, so Romney gets heckled today. He calls for a moment of silence to remember the fallen diplomats, and somebody yells, "Why are you politicizing Libya? Why are you politicizing Libya?" Couldn't even have his moment of silence. Poor Mitt. I mean, you know, he's trying so hard. He's got a couple of Republicans. You know, Sarah Palin likes what he's doing. Yeah, tell some lies about the president. By the way, President Obama, in that clip last night where he said that Romney is shooting first, naming later, then went on to say that Egypt is not an ally or an enemy. The White House is now saying that the president was speaking using colloquial terms, that technically, legally, Egypt is an ally of ours. We have treaties and agreements with Egypt that make them an ally. But what the president was really saying is, we don't know yet whether they're friend or foe. We're going to see how this government turns out, which is accurate. But I guarantee you he's going to get a lot of grief for that one, particularly on the right-wing blogosphere. So we'll see. We'll see. How does it play out? How does it all work? Danny in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Danny, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Good.
I guess Mitch should have had a moment of silence when he shut his mouth before he spoke.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, I don't think people really realize how inept Mitt is. You know, I mean, we saw his debacle when he went overseas in the Olympics and all that. But I was looking at his marketing, some marketing director he had on CNN last night, debating some Democrat, and basically he was blaming Mitt's statement on a tweet that the Egyptian embassy put out, and that's what he said. It was Obama's fault, that it was his fault that he got it wrong, you know, because Mitt, if you listen to his statement, he's talking about the violence, apologizing for the violence, and so, you know, he was wrong. The violence hadn't even happened yet.
Right.
And this marketing guy wants to put it on a tweet that came out later, and that's why they made the comment. So I think he's incompetent. I know you said that he's a liar, and, you know, I think I may agree with you a little bit on that. And so I think he's both. I think he's incompetent and a liar.
Well, I think this was an effort to Sarah Palinize the campaign. And I really do believe that Sarah Palin's comments and Bill O'Reilly's comments on Fox the day before or 2 days before, I don't recall which it was, but one or the other, before Romney said this, really genuinely influenced him, that he takes seriously what he watches on Fox News. And obviously he's paying attention to Fox News. And yeah, so he decided to try it out. And as you say, that's a sign of desperation and incompetence. I mean, Obama's 10 points ahead of him in Michigan, for example, right now.
Well, that's good. I mean, I don't know how you could want to be president and you're not absolutely sure of what you're saying when you put something as derogatory into a heated situation and you don't know if what you're saying is factual, if it could stand the muster. I mean, it's ridiculous. And how can people want a man like that for president?
I have said it before and I will say it again, Danny. The only way that Romney can win this election is by lying. And we've seen a lot of that up to this point. In fact, repeatedly, his Republican opponents in the primaries kept accusing him of lying, flip-flopping, changing his positions, making up stories about what he said in the past. I mean, you know, it's just this. The only way he can win is by lying, and I think that this is another example of it. Danny, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening to AM760 there in Denver. Tony in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've got a comment and a question. I've actually been following the teacher strike kind of closely. Fairly familiar with some of the issues on both sides. I actually happened to stop by three of the different sites where you had various teacher groups that were picketing throughout the week because I wanted to hear at the ground level what some of their issues are. And, you know, some of the issues make sense. But I'm wondering whether or not you're hearing anything at the ground level regarding how they plan to pay for some of the, some of the things that they're asking for. Because my understanding is that there's already a $300 million shortfall. And if the city agrees to, it could be as much as $1 billion. So, you know, assuming everything they're asking for is fair,
right,
is anything on the table to pay for it?
Well, I don't know. And that's a question that needs to be put to Rahm Emanuel. I mean, he's in charge of the budget. He gets to decide whether he's going to raise taxes on people in Chicago, whether he's going to cut other city services or functions, what he's going to do. That's his decision. And frankly, it's not anything that I think that the teachers union has to worry about. This is not their issue. Their issue is the suburban schools around Chicago are spending $24,000 per year per student. On average, the Chicago's inner city schools are spending $8,000 a year per student. A third of the schools in Chicago don't even have a library. Two thirds of them don't have music or art teachers. They don't even offer these things. I mean, schools don't have school nurses, schools don't have counselors. You got 15,580 homeless children who are being educated by the Chicago public school system. And when you got a homeless kid coming in, you got to do more than just make sure that they know how to add two and two. You got to get some food in them. You've got to deal with the grief and anxiety and fear and trauma associated with being homeless. And they don't have enough counselors. And so this stuff ends up falling on teachers. And in some cases, they're at war zones. You know, you got teenagers who are gangbangers, who are in gangs, who are literally killing people. This is really tough work in really tough areas. And these people are simply saying, give us the resources to do it and do it well. Instead of, my suggestion would be stop funding the for-profit schools. Take that money and put it into the public schools. But, again, that's up to them. Jim in Orenco, Oregon, listening to KPOJ. Jim, what's on your mind?
Oh, just concerned with the Romney administration. Do you think he's smart enough with his response to the Libyan incident? Would he go ahead and just attack like Ethiopia, Nigeria, or Morocco? We've already, attacked Iraq, and we kind of have an infrastructure there. Would he be smart enough just to re-attack them, or would he?
Who knows? I mean, he suggested he wants to attack Iran, which is insane.
Oh. But that's not on the same continent.
Yeah. Right.
Usually we skip a country, like we didn't hit Iran, we hit Iraq.
Right.
I just wonder what their policy might be. Anyway, thanks a lot, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. If you want to know what the Romney foreign policy would be like, Go back and look at the George W. Bush administration, because he's using the same people. Virtually all of his foreign policy advisors are recycled Bush people. Marlon in Wall, South Dakota. Hey, Marlon, we got a minute to the break. What's up?
Tom, I'm glad to talk to you, man. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time listener and caller. Okay. But I've been, man, you've been preaching what I love, history. And I'm it breaks my heart that a lot of people in America don't pay attention to history. And when you mentioned President Carter in 1980 into the Reagan years, those years, I tell people that that's when my country became this mess.
Yep.
They blame the current administration because they failed to look at history. We've been having these problems for 30-plus years.
Yep,
and
32 years.
On it. I mean, every time I meet people after I deliver vehicles and have a little quick discussion on history, most of them can't argue with the facts.
Yeah.
But they hate current administration, and they're complaining about it when they're not being fed to what history would show you.
Yeah, Marlon, no, it really did start in 1981 when Reagan became president. I started calling him Ronnie. Reagan became president, and we haven't abandoned Reaganomics yet. I mean, you know, the top tax rate is still, you know, 36%. It's nothing.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And if we really do want to have America function like it did in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and early 80s, we need to roll back Reaganomics. Just totally repudiate it.
Just give me faith, make me believe. Come on, save me. Save me. Mr. Wildman Man, if you can.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 21 minutes past the hour. David in Riverside, California. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Great.
Two quick comments, and I'm out of here. One is, it doesn't sound as though Rahm Emanuel was the type of guy who grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth. So I don't understand his position with these teachers. I'm just saying, you know.
He's promoting for-profit charter schools and wants to take several hundred of these, you know, wants to expand them by several hundred in Chicago, and has been, and Arnie Duncan before him was doing that. And I had Arnie on this show last week, and I called him out on it. I said, I don't think for-profit education is a good idea. And he said, well, I think it is. And then, you know, that's difference of opinion. So the fact of the matter is that the for-profit education industry has spent millions of dollars on lobbying and given millions of dollars to politicians. So I don't know if Rahm Emanuel is the recipient of some of that money or has been lobbied, or if he genuinely believes that for-profit education is the way to go, or if he simply finds himself in some horrible position with a city budget that he can't afford to offer decent education to the kids of Chicago. And that seems to me the least likely, because what should be the highest yeah. priority of any community? It's kids, right? And
yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I genuinely don't know the answer to that question. I can't tell you how Rahm Emanuel's thinking. I have no idea what's in his heart, and I'm not going to speculate in a way that would be you know, character assassination. He may well have the very best of intentions. I personally know some people who believe that charter schools are the great way to go. And in fact, actually, the Children's Village that Louise and I started, some of the people who ran that for a while went off and then started a charter school when those things started opening up in the 80s and 90s, and made so much money that they moved down to Panama, bought a bunch of land, and they created subdivisions down there. And you know. So I've seen it up close, and it can be very profitable.
I don't doubt it. And also, Romney, you know, as I said in the prior election, I'll give John McCain till 11:30 to concede defeat. Defeat at 11 o'clock. I'll give Romney a quarter to 12, and he's going to call it and say, sayonara, it's over. Because the people of America, I mean, you know, A lot of people are going to be hoodwinked and bamboozled, but yet a lot of people understand. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
They can see, they can hear, and, you know, thanks to social media and guys like you and, you know, other informants, you know, you're beginning to see the light where this guy's coming from. Their prized bull is, he's just what he is, Yep. Going to China shop, and he's breaking a lot of glass.
Yeah.
And thanks for the call, Tom. God bless, man.
You're welcome. Thank you. And the same to you, David. I appreciate the call. Election night, by the way, I'm going to be doing live election coverage on the RT network from 8 until midnight. I'll be there from 8 until midnight. So it should be an interesting evening. Ludwig in Greenwich, Connecticut. Hey, Ludwig, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Sure. Thanks for listening to Sirius XM. What's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, when I went to the University of Pennsylvania and I majored in history, and I remember when I took my first class on the history of the Middle East, and I said, wow, what a difference than what the mainstream media talks about. I mean, I just wanted to say that, you know, you think of a lot of people understood that when the British Empire switched their navy over from oil to, from oil to coal, and, you know, they didn't have any oil reserves. Yeah, so they had to invade the Middle East with General Maude, conquered the Middle East in 1918, conquered Baghdad. And just the fact that, you know, the World War One, the Berlin-Baghdad Railroad, you know, it's like we're occupying them, and this is a long history of them literally drawing these boundaries around oil. Mm-hmm. And now that economic nationalism is really big, not just in the Middle East, but in Africa and South America, it's like, why don't people just pick up a book and read the history of Iraq or read the history of Iran and understand that we're the occupiers? Right. I don't understand that.
And have been since World War One.
Yeah. You
know, since the Ottoman Empire was defeated. Yeah.
What do you think it is? Just a lack of education, or what do you think it is?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, by and large, Americans, you know, we're relatively unique, I think, in the world in that we don't tend to teach our kids much about the history of anybody except the United States and maybe British history. And you know, there's a very Anglo-Saxon worldview that is taught in our schools. And, you know, up until just very recently in most schools, we didn't teach the history of, for example, where African Americans came from, you know, the history of the continent of Africa and the various countries there that contributed to this, that out of which slaves were brought and brought to the United States. So we weren't teaching the history. The Irish complained loudly. In fact, they rioted in Boston in the late 1890s that, you know, the schools were not teaching Irish history. It was all English. It was all this British worldview. I think that, you know, it's ethnocentrism, if that's the right phrase, if that's the right word. It's a certain type of myopia that is ultimately, I think, very destructive, because we end up, as you correctly point out, with people who just don't have a clue. They just don't have a clue. Ludwig, thanks a lot for the call. Tony in New York, listening on WWRL. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about, you know, you mentioned charter schools. You know, they had the Stanford University probably made the largest study of charter schools. Now, I don't remember any details. 16 states, 2,400 charter schools, or 24 states, 1,600. You could probably find it very easily. But the results of the study is that charter schools, that actually the public school system, traditional public school system, on the whole, did better than the charter schools.
Right.
Now, there are some good charter schools, and there's a lot of terrible ones. Now, Barry Lynn, I know probably you heard of him, and the Americans United, mm-hmm. has done a study, too, of the hundreds of charter schools that are in actuality religious schools.
Right.
And by the way, the other thing, if you've never had Diane Ravitch on as a guest, please have her on. She's probably written the best book on this, and she's probably the most knowledgeable about this move to privatize public schools.
Okay, I'll check it out. Diane Ravitch.
And you know, the other thing about,
how do you spell her last name?
Ravitch. She's a professor of education and history of education at New York University, and her latest book is The Death and Life of the Great American Public School System.
Wow.
Or something like that. She's been on Ed Schultz's show a number of times and on NPR, and she was an advocate.
I will track her down. Tony, we're out of time, but thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. We'll be back 4:28.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Or at least here in D.C., it's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Newsweek is reporting the guy behind the movie is a fellow by the name of Nakula Baseli Nakula. And he was arrested by the L.A. County Sheriff's Department on March 27, 1997, and charged with intent to manufacture methamphetamine, pleaded guilty, and was sentenced on November 3, 1997, to a year in county jail, 3 years probation. The guy's a meth cooker. In 2002, he violated probation, was sent back to jail for another year. From 2002 to 2008, he was registered to vote as a Democrat. Oops. 2008, he changed that to American Independent. His identity and involvement with film has been confirmed by the Associated Press by federal law enforcement officials. He had claimed, this is really interesting, he had claimed, I'm reading from Christine Peltzik's story over at Daily Beast and Newsweek. He had claimed that the guy who was behind the movie was an American Israeli. But in fact, it was him, Nakula, who is a Coptic Christian. That's the Christians from Egypt. So this, and the movie was originally titled The Innocence of Bin Laden. This story is getting more and more convoluted as time goes by. By the way, they're attacking the Egyptian embassy with Molotov cocktails. Now we have riots in Yemen, we have riots in Syria, this is spreading across the Arab world. First we had the Arab Spring, now we've got the Arab blowback. This is presenting a very, very interesting challenge to President Obama and to Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has so far failed the test, you know, trying to politicize the death of our diplomats. We'll see how Obama does this. Joe in Albany, New York. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to ask something about the way Bush got in, the alleged stuff that happened in the swing states, and why it doesn't seem to me the Democrats are really... if it was up to me, we'd be watching the polling places when come this election.
Right.
Because if they do it again, I mean...
The Democrats do have an army of lawyers who will be at many of the polling places come this election time. In addition to, you know, they've got this group called Cook the Vote or Count the Vote or True the Vote or whatever it is. And that group, it's a right-wing group. They say that they're going to have 1 million people standing at the polls. And if anybody looks like they might vote Democratic, they're going to yell at them and challenge them and ask them to prove their identity. And in some states, you can even force them to take a provisional ballot simply by saying, I challenge this person. So it's going to be a very interesting election, and you're going to see a lot of this going on. So anyhow, we'll see how it comes out, Joe. Thanks a lot for the call. Pink Panther in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, what's up?
Hey, I had a couple of comments for you. First of all, about you know what's happening out there in with Egypt and all that. First of all, I don't know why all our leaders have to run around making us like the political hall monitors of the world when, you know, our Constitution is supposed to guarantee separation of church and state. So, therefore, shouldn't we, you know, pretty much be butting out of people's religion in the first place?
It seems like a fine idea to me, yeah.
Yeah, and also, jumping subjects, on the NDAA.
Right.
This sort of makes peace talks impossible. You know, that one provision there, without making all of our political leaders sort of guilty of terrorism themselves, and also all of our founding fathers, because they're, by having peace talks and all that, they're definitely associating with, you know, known enemies and,
yeah,
you know, yada yada.
And therefore they could be arrested. I mean, that was arguably, that was the, thank you for the call, that was the argument that Chris Hedges made, was if as a journalist I talk to the bad guys, then I can be indefinitely detained for the rest of my life. That's not a good thing. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see where this all goes. John in Northampton, Mass, listening to WHMP. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yesterday you had somebody on towards the end of the day, and he was talking about how the Israelis were the first to use bombs and in their conflict with the Palestinians. And actually, if you read about T.H. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, you find out that he was actually the father of the roadside bomb. He taught the Arabs how to plant bombs on roadside so they could kill the Turks. And basically, a little further interesting part of it is one of his few lady friends, and she was a lady, you know, in a lordship lady type realm in England, was the largest shareholder of the British Persian Oil Company, which is BP. And it's all laid out in...
Wait a minute. BP was originally British Persian, not British Petroleum?
Yeah. Yeah, British Persian. And the Iranians owned 50% of it. And it's kind of interesting that this one woman that was really tied to him, I mean, they were... It was sort of so amazing.
What were the years that Lawrence of Arabia was active in Arabia?
After World War One, before World War One, and after World War One, he had actually been an archaeologist. He walked across Syria, and the Brits used him to go into all of Arabia, so to speak, from Morocco on over, right. I guess, to challenge the Turks. And they knew all along, the British knew all along, they were building, instead of building coal-fired warships, the British were building oil-fired warships, and they knew they needed that oil. They were doing oil field studies in the Arab section of Africa, obviously, and they knew what they had.
Right.
And
especially with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, yeah, and it was definitely, I mean, you know, I mean, the father of the whole thing was Lawrence of Arabia.
Wow. Wow. Okay, thank you for the history lesson, John. I appreciate
it.
Thank you. I clearly need to do a little reading there on that. We will see how that shakes out. John in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Man, you're my hero. I think you're the smartest guy on the radio. Hey, I'm really concerned that there are these people out there who will try and make these videos, you know, go back to Hillary's video and others, knowing full and well that they'll incite people around the world just for political gain. That's a kind of
The Hillary video the Citizens United put together was to knock Hillary Clinton out because they thought that if Obama got the presidency that you know, he was a African American with Hussein as a middle name. He'd be easy to beat for the Republicans.
Yeah,
it didn't quite work out as planned. And now they've got this Obama 2012 or 2016 or whatever it is movie that's based on Dinesh D'Souza, you know, in one of his books. And Dinesh, I mean, he's been on this program a bunch of times. Dinesh is, frankly, I think, badly off base. And you know, he's doing a lot of imagining and a lot of projecting and a lot of hallucinating, frankly, and for this movie. And
scary stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think that those movies are intended to move the Arab world. Those movies are intended to move the American electorate.
But I think it was maybe the start, and people saw the reaction and thought, hey, you know what? We could take this to the next level. And the next level certainly would be something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see where this goes. John, thanks a lot for the call. Steve in Wake Forest, North Carolina. Hey, Steve, what's up? Steve? No, Steve. Ali in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Ali, what's up?
Hey,
Ali.
Glad to be on, Tom. Thank you.
Sure.
I just wanted to discuss real quickly the candle burning at both ends. And I think that in the middle is disaster. And we're getting to that point really quickly because not only are there villains in the Muslim world, but there are villains in the Christian world. This pastor... preacher, so-called, Jones in Florida, one who was going to burn the Quran.
Right, now he wants to have a trial for Muhammad.
Exactly, and he is part and parcel of this film that everybody is excited about, and it was put out there intentionally. Just information that you have given just recently about what the name of was originally. But the scary thing is that the people who were actors who were portrayed in there were saying on the news that they didn't know that it was going to be that kind of film. They were told it's something entirely different.
Right.
So I think that we, you know, the freedoms of this country tends to backfire itself into the face of people who are truly righteous, who are truly straight and want to be a free living society. Mm-hmm. But these jerks come along and exercise those rights to start the kind of issues that we're seeing in the Muslim world. And I think it's just a tragedy.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. Very well said. Thanks a lot for the call, Ali. Marlene in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Marlene, what's up?
Oh, hey, hi there. I just wanted to say that I think America has been messing around with the Middle East for decades and for our own interests. And I think it's time we put our big boy pants on and got out of the embassies there and stopped giving them money.
Yeah, just come home and say, okay, enough already. Well said, Marlene, and my apologies for giving you so little time there. I missed my time cue. But thank you very much for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more right after this. Stick around. 45 minutes past the hour. The place where we dare ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Don't even try it. Congresswoman Donna Edwards on the line with us. Congresswoman, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us again. You are out speaking out on behalf of the Obama campaign right now. Do I have that right?
I am.
So tell us about, what is your... To call it a sales pitch, I don't mean to denigrate it. I mean, what are the issues that really ring your bell here in this election?
Well, I mean, I think clearly, I mean, the president has really stated it. I mean, he's, you know, taken us from where it is that we were in the free fall of this economy to stabilizing our financial markets, stabilizing our economy, and now beginning to grow.
Yes.
And I think that the president has rightly said that we're not where we want to be, but we're on our way there, and it really is, I think, very sort of forward-looking based on where this economy has been. And I know that out in my congressional district and all across the country, while, you know, people aren't feeling the immediate relief, we've stopped the free fall, and I think that most people recognize that, and I think that's reflected in, the president's strong sense coming out of our convention and then moving forward to November 6th.
You know, one of the more common calls that I get as a progressive talk show host is from progressives who basically are whining that the president is not progressive enough. And my response, and I went through a fairly lengthy rant about this morning, was remember 1980, you know, when Carter was sort of moving to the center. He deregulated the trucking industry and the air travel industry and those kind of things. And it upset Ted Kennedy and who primaried him, you know, a sitting president. And that really hurt the Carter administration. And what did we get? We got Ronald Reagan. Had Jimmy Carter got a second term instead of Ronald Reagan, by now there would be peace in the Middle East. He would have gotten the Israelis and the Palestinians together. We would no longer be dependent on foreign energy. He had a plan to make us independent of foreign energy by the year 2000. He had the solar bank. He had all the, you know, we wouldn't have seen the neocon war machine rise. We wouldn't have seen the top tax rates on millionaires and billionaires, you know, be cut by three quarters. I mean, on and on and on. It's like, you know, can't we remember history here?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. You know me. I am a strong and solid progressive, and I am not whining. And I know that for people in my congressional district, people who, you know, have the good fortune to be able to get up because they do still have a job, and what folks know who are saving for their retirement, if they were fortunate enough to be able to save for retirement, they know that they lost a third of their retirement because of the absolute irresponsibility in the financial sector that the president had to straighten up. And so, and we know that that's recovering. I think for people in my congressional district, and I think about African Americans all across this country who, for the first time ever have health care and are moving on to the health care world, you see the numbers of insured people has actually increased.
Over a million.
Just because of the implementation of Obamacare, and I'm glad that Obamacare had enough to get health care reform passed, because the president recognized what a drag on the economy it was and how long it is for people not to have health care. And so I actually can see that, and I can see looking forward to a president who's very committed to, you know, creating jobs in a new economy so that we can be globally competitive. And really, what has gotten in the way of that, what's gotten in the way of it, are obstructionist Republicans who stood in the way of every single jobs bill, who stood in the way of any kind of kind of reform, who want to go back to the days when the financial industry was completely unregulated, and who want to then impose a set of policies on us. And look at the Romney campaign. What they want to do, they want to basically recreate all the policies that got us into the mess in the first place. They must think that the American public has just kind of lost it. But we haven't. And the president has said, we know what got us here. We know those bad policies, and we are not going to repeat our mistakes. We're going to grow this economy in a way that is, has shared responsibility for our, you know, for what we need to do in our economy, throughout the economy. We're going to make sure that the people who, I don't know, got tons of tax breaks over this last decade actually pay their fair share and begin to grow the economy again. Yeah. I think that's looking forward. And so I'm actually a proud progressive in support of the president moving forward.
Yep, me too. And I just, you know, I want to say to my progressive friends, you know, maybe we didn't get everything we wanted, right? You know, people are still, you know, they're upset about the NDAA or whatever. But, you know, look at the alternative. I mean, Romney is Reagan and in some ways even Nixon, but certainly Reagan and Bush on steroids.
Well, and I agree. And but what I would say to people, it isn't so much look at the alternative, because, yeah, he's bad. But you know what? Our guy is good.
Yeah,
and he's actually done some great things.
You're right. So he has done a lot of good things.
I feel like Governor Deval Patrick reminded all of us, you know, have a backbone, stand up straight, and be proud of the things that we've done, and be proud of the things that we're going to do with this president when he's reelected.
Yeah, and all the good things that we tried to do. I mean, let us not forget the literally hundreds of pieces of legislation that you worked on, that you voted for, that Nancy Pelosi got out of the House of Representatives, and only to die in the Senate in the face of a United Republican filibuster. Things that would have brought our jobs back home, things that would have enhanced health care, things that could have strengthened this country.
Well, and let's remember, I mean, we were losing 750,000 jobs a month in the month that the president was inaugurated, and instead we're now gaining jobs. Are we gaining jobs at the rate that we necessarily want to? Of course, the president even says we need to, you know, do better, and we will. But we've gained 4.6 million jobs over the course of the last 3 years. That's called the beginnings of a good recovery, and it would be even more had the Republicans not stood in the way of the American Jobs Act that the president brought over to us, and the Republicans in Congress failed to pass them. Why is that? Because they said from the beginning, we're going to do everything possible to make sure that this president can fail. And as a result, they were willing to sacrifice jobs and opportunities for the American people in order to make President Obama fail. That's irresponsible.
So true and so well said. Congresswoman Donna Edwards, representing the great state of Maryland. Congresswoman, thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Thanks for being with us. And just to put a, you know, an exclamation point on Congresswoman Edwards' comments, the Republicans are yelling about Ben Bernanke wanting to help the economy. They really want it to fail.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Tommy Christopher is on the line with us. Tommy is writes and produces video and whatnot over at Mediaite.com. Tommy, what's your official role or position there?
I'm political editor and White House reporter.
Media correspondent and White House reporter. There we go. I finally found it. Thank you very much. And Tommy Extifer is the Twitter. So, Tommy, you are an astute observer of the American political scene. What do you make of this, Romney attacking Obama at the same time that we've got four diplomats dying in Libya?
Well, you know, I don't have a lot to add to that that everybody else has already said. You know, it reeks of desperation. You know, it was callow. It was disgusting, disgraceful. But, you know, I'm like I said before, I think that there, too much focus is being put on the fact that he politicized it, and not enough emphasis is being placed on the fact that, you know, he lied repeatedly in order to do it.
Right.
You know, so when people say, oh, he politicized it, they might also get the idea that what he's saying, while politicized, might actually be true, and it's not.
Right. And so walk us through that.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit complicated, but basically Mitt Romney is trying to say that a statement that was put out by the embassy in Cairo is actually the same thing as an Obama administration statement. And he's trying to say that the statement was the administration's response to the violence when the statement was put out before there was any violence, so it wasn't a response to anything.
Right, it preceded
That's what this entire attack is based on two huge lies.
Right. So, Tommy, why is it that the corporate media in America would pick up the he's politicizing this event and not pick up the Romney is lying? I mean, this isn't the first time that Romney has just flat-out, bald-faced lied during this campaign.
Right, and, you know, that could be part of the problem is that, you know, we're in this era of post-truth politics. You know, it's not a new story that Mitt Romney's a liar or that Paul Ryan's a liar. It is a new story that they've, you know, decided to shoot themselves in both feet by politicizing a tragedy as it's unfolding. I feel like the media should be able to pay attention to two things at once, but that's really not a strength of ours. So, I do understand why it should be a big story that he's done this, that he's feeling this desperate. It should be a big story that you know, he's such a disaster on foreign policy. Because that's something that people need to understand to evaluate his candidacy. But I also feel like the fact that he's just a huge, fat liar should be getting at least equal time.
Yeah, at the very least. You've been an observer of the media scene for a long time and a White House correspondent. Why, you know, is there a decision made? Is there a herd mentality? Is there a, you know, one network leads with it and everybody else picks it up? I mean, why is it that the story that Romney, you know, made a political mistake by trying to politicize, you know, the death of our diplomats became the story for 2 days rather than the fact that Romney was basing an attack on the president based on a lie?
Yeah, I think it's the media bubble effect. You know, we all report on this stuff constantly, and we're so used to you know, politicians, you know, not actually responding to the questions we ask and you know, I mean, even, you know, it's like a daily occurrence. I mean, I cover the White House, and, you know, a good 80% of what happens in White House briefings consists of Jay Carney, not answering the question that he was asked.
Right.
So we sort of get it. I think, you know, we get inured to it. And so, you know, Romney making these lies that have, like, a technical basis. In fact, like, you know, you could say technically, you know, an ambassador is appointed by the administration, and so technically it's an administration thing, and so technically, but you know, it's still a lie because, you know, I mean, technically, the guy at the drive-thru window is a representative of McDonald's, but if he tells you to go screw yourself, you can't then write the headline that says, McDonald's tells me to go screw myself.
Right. And in effect, when a lowly news guy in an embassy that's not even staffed by the ambassador, she's here in the United States on home leave, puts out a statement to the Egyptian people saying, you know, we're not all that fine. You know, we don't agree or we don't endorse the trashing of anybody's religion. Then, you know, that is not a White House statement. So, but Romney said it was. And in fact, he said it was a response to the violence when in fact it preceded the violence. Yeah, the only network I've seen accurately report on that, other than Anderson Cooper on CNN, has been MSNBC. That's it. And presumably Free Speech TV and Current have been, you know, accurately portraying it. But the big corporate media, CBS, ABC, NBC, certainly Fox, and much of CNN have not been reporting that dimension of it.
Yeah, and something that I think everybody has missed is that Romney, at his press conference, tried to say, well, you know, even after the violence started, they tweeted out a thing saying we stand by our statement. And so that's what he's saying. That's how he's papering over this, that it was a response.
But what he doesn't say is that they also tweeted out at the same time, we stand by what we said about other religions, but we also condemn the attacks.
Right.
Nobody's reporting that either. So, yeah, I mean, Romney is, a despicable liar. And, you know, yes, it's despicable that he tried to exploit a tragedy. But, yeah, you know, I feel like we're getting way too used to the lying. It's, we in the media and, mm-hmm. Especially people. Look, everybody knows I'm a liberal. And so, I can point this stuff out until I'm blue in the face. And if people don't want to listen, they'll just say, well, he's a liberal. What's he going to say? It's important for people who work at places like CNN, the New York Times, even MSNBC, a lot of their daytime news programming is objective. It's important for them to stay on top of this stuff because, if they're not going to call, if they can't call a lie, then, who can?
Right. Right. And like I said, this isn't the first time. I mean, Romney has lied about the president before and he's lied about himself before. It just astounds me. Tommy Christopher, very well said, media correspondent, White House reporter for Mediaite.com, MediaIte.com is the website. Check it out. Tommy, thanks for the great work you're doing.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And keep spreading the message. You're doing a great job of it. Mediaite.com. Check out Tommy Christopher's work. 866-97-THOM, our telephone number. John in Montrose, Colorado. Hey, John. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I just had a thought, about this video that's gone viral or whatever it did. That my thinking is like this. The NSA and all our security guys that we have up there that we pay a lot of tax dollars around that, I guess, since 9/11 anyway. But that, that they saw this coming. They saw this video and they thought, somebody hopefully thought, man, this might, irritate some people in the Middle East. Maybe they shouldn't see it, but My analogy around this is, freedom of speech and all that good business, but I can't go down in a crowded movie theater and yell fire. There are laws around free speech also. And if these guys saw that coming up, what are they thinking? Well, it's somebody else's movie theater. It's okay if they...
Well, here's the other part of that problem, though. If you're yelling fire in a crowded theater, you're not making a religious statement. The First Amendment not only protects free speech, it also protects freedom of religion. We have, in the United States, put a lot of, a large fence, basically, around religion and religious activities and said the government is not going to involve itself with these. And they should not involve themselves with government, which is a whole other, argument or debate or whatever. I think that they should all lose their tax-exempt status.
I don't see why they couldn't do it as long as we tax them. If they want to get into politics, then
right,
they should be taxed.
Right, right. Yeah,
anyway.
Let's just get rid of their tax-exempt status. But the point is that this movie, regardless of what you may think of it, and even though I agree with your analogy that in a way it is yelling fire in a crowded theater, yelling fire isn't a political statement. And this movie, or excuse me, a religious statement, and this movie purports to be one, and that makes it tougher. But John, you raise an interesting point. We must have known what was coming.
This is the Tom Hartman Program,
and I'll bet it was a real challenge. It within the corridors of power, as it were, in the intelligence community, to figure out, how do we respond to this? Should we respond to this?
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the Chinese. You blew the budget and you bossed Iraq.
This is a song back from the 2004 election, as I recall. When the song came out, it was an anti-Bush song, and it still works. The Reverend D. Alexander Bullock is back with us, the president of Rainbow Push Detroit and the president of the NAACP in Highland Park. RainbowPushDetroit.org is the website. Reverend Bullock, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
Thank you. It's very nice to have you back with us. What is the state of affairs in Michigan right now with Governor Snyder trying to put his crony managers in place of elected officials around the state?
Well, the state of affairs is this. while the ballot initiative finally is on the ballot, we will be able to vote no on Proposal 1. And so that's the good news. No on Proposal 1. Vote PA4 down. There's been all this political maneuvering to keep emergency managers in place. And so emergency managers were supposed to have been suspended once the ballots were counted, the signatures were certified, and the referendum was put on the ballot. Unfortunately, the maneuver has now been made to try to downgrade them or keep them in place. And so in Highland Park school system, for instance, there is no public school system in Highland Park anymore. It has basically been dismantled. There's an emergency manager. The emergency manager gave the school to a charter school corporation. DPS still has their emergency manager. Flint has an emergency manager, a new one, who claims to be a lame duck emergency manager. But there's some strange things going on where buildings that were worth $9 million taxpayer dollars were sold for $1. Federal grants for redevelopment are being given to corporations. Land that is public land for public use is being taken from the people and given to corporations for private development. The EM is still in Benton Harbor. Then there's a new EM in Allen Park. And so while we have won the provisional victory of being able to vote this thing down, we're seeing all kind of legal maneuvering in place to still prop up this system of dictatorship. And so we want to remind people that this is still a live option. This is still a major issue. We must vote no on Proposal 1. We must fight to protect democracy.
Yeah, and this is an astounding thing that Governor Rick Snyder did in Michigan, where, and the legislature for that matter, they passed this law giving the governor basically dictatorial powers so he could put his cronies in charge of whatever city or school district he wanted. He has been doing that, and not only did they pass it, but they passed it. It should have gone into effect a year later. They passed it in a way that implied a supermajority that wasn't actually there. I mean, arguably, this law shouldn't even be in place. And then there was the Michigan Constitution, I believe it is, says that, you know, when something is being challenged on the ballot, that as soon as it's on the ballot, that thing has to be suspended. And now they're saying, no, we're not going to suspend it. Really?
That's right. That's right. I mean, as you pointed out, we have seen a miscarriage of justice and the hypocrisy of using the law for the imposition of power over the people's will. The abuse of the immediate effect, that's right. Public Act 4 shouldn't even have been in play. And then now that we've collected the appropriate signatures and it's on the ballot, it should be suspended. But indeed, we haven't seen much change on the ground. And so we have gotten a partial victory where certain parts of the consent agreement in Detroit have been struck down, but we're still seeing teachers and firefighters being assaulted. We're still seeing cities being targeted where, you know, Highland Park, 1400 lights being taken out of the city of Highland Park, the city of Detroit, Belle Isle, which is a public park, is being slated to be taken over by the state. And of course, now citizens will have to pay to go on indeed is their own park, marinas being taken from the city. And so the private developers, and so we're seeing the state of Michigan being turned into a flea market where school districts and cities who may be cash poor but asset rich are being stripped, much like homes are stripped of their copper. This is a very, very key issue, because the question is this: when there's a financial crisis in a state or a city, how will we respond? Will we respond by destroying democracy, by divesting and destroying urban and rural communities? Or will we respond by strengthening democracy and by developing ingenious plans for redevelopment that will put people back to work and that will hold corporate citizens and regular citizens accountable? And so we are marching towards November. Happy to come on the show today to, again, raise the call, raise the issue. We need folks in Michigan to begin to tell their neighbors and their churches and their locals and their friends to vote no on Proposal 1. We must fight to maintain our voice and our vote in this state.
Yeah, there you go. And the polls are showing that President Obama is 10 points ahead of Mitt Romney in Michigan, which is amazing given that Mitt Romney's dad was governor of Michigan. He grew up in Michigan, or somewhat. I mean, I guess he went to elite private schools all over the place. But, you know, he he considers Michigan his home state or his childhood state. And I'm wondering how much of the legislature, how much of the House of Representatives and the Senate are up for re-election this year, and is the governor, I believe, is not up for re-election. Is that correct?
That's right. The governor has two more years. He's not up.
Okay. So how much of the House and Senate are up for re-election, and do you think it's possible for the Democrats to take back the legislature?
Indeed, it is possible for the Democrats to take back the legislature. This is a very, very crucial year, not just for the president, but as you mentioned, on the local level. Also, let me add, there are two slots in the Michigan Supreme Court that are up. And so it's very, very interesting. We could have two Democrats joining the Michigan Supreme Court after this year. And so that's very, very key.
That would be a fine thing. So the bottom line here is make sure that you're registered to vote in Michigan. If you live in Michigan, make sure that you're registered to vote in Michigan and then show up in November.
The bottom line is make sure you're registered to vote, show up, and vote no on Proposal 1.
There you go. Vote no on Proposal 1. Reverend Bullock. RainbowPushDetroit.org. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's really an important. It's amazing what the Republicans have gotten away with illegally in the state of Michigan. It's just amazing.
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school.
Cake.
And proud.
Well, I can't claim to be one of those who got high marks in school. Anyway, here, this is our 2 minutes of the week when we talk about science for a minute. The September 13th, 2012 issue of the journal Cell, Host, and Microbe. Yes, there's actually a journal titled Cell, Host, and Microbe. Published a study showing that this study is the first to demonstrate that microbes can promote the absorption of dietary fat in the intestine and their subsequent metabolism in the body. In other words, it is, you know, if your gut flora, if the bacteria in your gut, they actually did this study on fish, but, you know, they are quite certain you can extend the logic to any complex animal that has an intestinal system. That if the microbes are in good balance, then they metabolize fats properly, and if they're out of balance, they metabolize fats improperly. Now, the improperly can run in one of two directions. It can be that they over-metabolize fats. In other words, you absorb fats like crazy and produce obesity, or that they under-metabolize fats, and people end up with diseases that are the result of not having enough fatty acids in their bloodstream, in their bodies. It's really a fascinating study, and in fact, they say our findings indicate that the gut microbiota can increase the host's ability to harvest calories from the diet by stimulating fat absorption, and presumably the opposite. So the title, the headlines over at Science Daily, gut microbes help the body extract more calories from food. So what's the carry-home message from this? Eat your yogurt, eat your sauerkraut, you know, take your little probiotic pearls, whatever it may be. They may help you out tremendously. Zach in Farmington Hills, Michigan, listening to WDTW. Hey, Zach, what's up? Zach,
Hi,
you are
How
on
are you?
Here.
Hi. One question.
Yeah.
Why do you think, why America is so polarized? Why Fox Radio, Fox News, only for Republican, MSNBC only for Democrats, and nothing in between?
Yeah, I would submit to you that the main reason America is so polarized started out 30 years ago, 40 years ago, in the Richard Nixon administration, when a fellow by the name of Roger Ailes sat down with Richard Nixon and proposed a thing called GOP TV. Richard Nixon said, no, we're not going to do this. Roger Ailes later proposed it to Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch funded it. It's called Fox News right now. So between the Rush Limbaugh phenomenon and all the right-wing talk show hosts and corporate-friendly talk show hosts on major corporate networks all across the country, between that and Fox News, I would submit to you that you have the formula for polarization, extreme polarization. And that's what's happened, in my opinion. And I think that, you know, we need to be pushing back. Steve in DeKalb, Illinois. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I don't want to sound like a whining progressive, but there was a little story about Exelon Energy being kicked out of the American Wind Energy Association recently for lobbying against wind energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard President Obama's speech about global warming and clean coal, it made me think that his connections with Exelon Energy and my conversations with him trying to defend clean coal, which there is no such thing,
right,
seemed pretty disingenuous to me.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I've said on the air I was shocked by hearing him say clean coal in that acceptance speech at the DNC. On the other hand, Mitt Romney is not just in favor of clean coal. He's in favor of all fossil fuels, right? Drill more, drill here, drill now, mine it, but do it at the minimum wage. I mean, Mitt Romney wants to take us back to the 19th century, and not something that's popular with me, just to say it bluntly. Bob in Amherst, Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'll tell you what the talking point is in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's the gas prices went up 12 cents a gallon overnight here. And I'm wondering if this has something to do with this unrest in the Middle East and speculation.
Yeah, the unrest in the Middle East is giving an excuse to the speculators to jack the price up. Yeah, absolutely.
And the working class, they can't take that heat.
Right.
And why doesn't Obama, it would be a very smart move to release some of that strategic oil reserve right now and get these prices down?
Yeah, well,
my daughter commutes 150 miles a day for a decent job with a decent income,
well,
but she can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like one transmission breakdown from poverty.
Wow, that's
what's going on with that?
Yeah, that is a grim story, my guess is that if it were October, he probably would, because that's when people actually start seriously paying attention to presidential politics. But I think that it's a little too early. But your point about the speculators is a really important one that needs to be emphasized more often. Bob, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to WHMP. Brenda in Windsor, California. Hey, Brenda, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
I'm calling regarding what you might say is freedom of religion,
mm-hmm,
or freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's about this movie about Islam.
Right.
Okay. We here in America and around most of the world have to have this reasonable expectation of free speech where we can pretty much say what we want to say about whoever. All right?
Right.
But these Muslims in the East, they seem to think that they have a right to control anybody and everybody who uses the name Muhammad in a way that they don't approve of.
Yeah, it's not unlike Jerry Falwell back 20 years ago trashing people who called themselves Christians but weren't fundamentalists.
Correct, all right? And if they don't agree with them, they have a right to kill you and maim you and whatever.
Well, the kill you and maim you part appears to be political, not religious. It appears that what happened in Libya, and there's a growing body of evidence for this, and the Libyan government has now arrested a number of people related to this, was really an Al-Qaeda thing, that it was, or some group. It was a small group of people who were very heavily armed. They must have emptied an armory when the government fell, when Gaddafi fell, and they went into that embassy with the intention of killing people, and it had nothing to do with the movie. It had everything to do with it being 9/11.
But it's not. This is not the first time. Remember the cartoon that was done in Scandinavia?
Yes.
That guy had to go into hiding to save his life. And the guy that wrote the book, I can't remember his name.
Salman Rushdie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been at two events where he was there. It's not like he's hiding.
Well, he had to hide in the beginning.
Yeah,
he
chose
alive.
To. Yes. And I'm not. Please understand. I'm not defending anybody who says, my religion says, I have to kill you. We have seen that movie before. Christians did that in the 10th century. There are some Muslims who are stuck in that headspace. It is a tiny minority of the Muslim community. There's 1.6 billion Muslims on earth. And we're talking about a couple thousand or a couple of tens of thousands of people, and who are behaving like crazies. and they are being called out by their own people. I don't. Did you see the counter protests that happened in Libya yesterday morning, where they, you know, where these women were out, mostly, actually there were men too, but the signs, there was a group of women who were holding signs in English that said, you know, violence is not a Muslim value, and you know, we condemn the violence, and you know, Christopher Stevens, R.I.P., and things like that. I think that there, you know, within the Muslim world, that's where the real battle is going on, between the extremists and the crazies and the people who just want to have a decent life.
Right.
And the, ultimately, I think at the end of the day, the people who just want to have a decent life are going to win. But it takes some time to get there. I mean, you know, in the 1860s, here in what we call the United States, what was then the British colonies in the state of Massachusetts, you had the Puritans come over and the Pilgrims come over from England who had seized control of the British, you know, monarchy for 5 years, I believe it was. Cromwell controlled England and made it illegal for people to dance or sing. And the British said, hey, screw this. We'd rather have our king back. And they brought back the king and they kicked out these people. So they came to Massachusetts and set up their shop there. And they started, you know, hanging women for being witches. And control, you go to prison if you didn't show up for church every Sunday. And they had literally police who went around from house to house to see on Sunday to see if you were in church or not. And you had to pay a tithing. You had to pay a tax to the church if you lived in Massachusetts. Ben Franklin was born in Massachusetts, and when he was 16 or 17 years old, he was so horrified by this that he left home and moved to Philadelphia and never went back. Massachusetts, I mean, this was one of the biggest issues during the Constitutional Convention, was that there were still representatives from Massachusetts who wanted to maintain that state as a theocracy. And the rest of the people, you know, who were putting together the United States of America said, no, we're not going to have a theocracy in the United States. We're not going to have a state that's run as a theocracy. And Massachusetts eventually, by 1778, had to abandon that. But I'm telling you, it was alive and well in 1772 in Massachusetts. And horrifying to many of the other founders. We went through that. And I would submit to you that Egypt is going through that right now. And it took us, I mean, you know, it took us 100 years. We had a civil war. You know, 50 or 70 years later, it's like it took us 100 years to finally figure this thing out. And arguably, it took us 200 years to really free the slaves. And we still haven't completely and become a really genuinely pluralistic and altruistic society. And it's going to take some time for Egypt and Syria and Libya and all these other countries in the Middle East to figure it out. It might even take them 100 years. I doubt it. I think it's going to take more like 20 or 30. But I see this as a step in the right direction. Brenda, thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And by a step in the right direction, I'm talking about the counter-protesters. I'm talking about the conflict. I'm talking about the discussion. I'm talking about the fact that Egypt now has a democratically elected prime minister.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. David in Stockton, California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, listen, I was just kind of curious. You know, when Romney made that statement about the embassy, I would consider that he would have people behind him giving him the correct information.
Right.
You know, he's campaigning. Would he have people that be smart enough to? I don't think it just came. He just thought of that, did he?
When Paul Ryan accepted his nomination to be vice president of the United States or to run for that office and came out and said and attacked President Obama for taking $700 billion out of Medicare, knowing that that was not true, because Paul Ryan had included that same $700 reallocation of funds in his own budget. You know, it's like when you look at, and that's one of five major lies that was just in his acceptance speech. Mitt Romney was doing the same thing and still is telling these stories. They're still running ads right now that Obama destroyed the welfare to work program that Bill Clinton put into place, when in fact he didn't. He gave some waivers to a couple of Republican governors with the requirement that they had to get more people out of welfare and onto work rather than fewer. It was an absolute requirement. So this is just a total lie. The Romney campaign has been, from day one, operating on the big lie strategy. If you tell a lie that's big enough and outrageous enough, people will believe it because of its audacity. And Romney tried to do that with his foreign policy thing, thinking that he'd get some foreign policy cred. And I think the one thing that he didn't realize was that there were four Americans dead. But then the next day, when he decided to double down on it yesterday, at that point, he clearly knew that there were four dead Americans. And if you watch the video of him making his double down statement, you know, where he says, yes, and I think it's terrible that the president's apologizing, he could hardly get the words out of his mouth. I mean, it was one of the most amazing pieces of video I've ever seen. He obviously knew he was lying, and he obviously was very uncomfortable with it because it was a brand new, fresh lie that he was being called out in the media about. And the only people who had his back were Fox News and Rush Limbaugh. So, you know, but I think that that's his strategy. You know, Franklin Roosevelt pointed this out back years ago when he said, you know, Roosevelt just came out and said, you know, there's this guy who wrote this book and he's got this strategy in it. Well, here's Franklin Roosevelt talking about it.
Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf.
There was a book, Mein Kampf.
Written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood.
Never use a small falsehood.
Always a big one.
Always a big one.
For its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
And Roosevelt was talking. There's another clip that goes along with this where he says basically, this is what the other side, the other party, is doing. In other words, the Republican Party. And this was in the election of 1948 that the Republicans were lying about Roosevelt. And he's saying, you know, basically they got their strategy from Hitler. And that's what Romney's doing now. It's the big lie strategy. John, Folsom, California. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'd just like to give my take on this Mitt Romney character.
Yeah.
This guy is being used. He is being used by the super rich, the Koch brothers.
Wait a minute. He's worth $750 million. You think he's not part of the super rich?
Change. That's chump change to some people.
Yeah, okay.
This guy's going to lose the election, and he's going to go back to his life, and it's not going to affect him at all.
Sure.
But the danger of having somebody like this in a position to be commander-in-chief and president of this great country just scares the heck out of me. And I've never voted Republican in my life, and I never will, but I just come from a working-class background, and I'm actually a middle-of-the-roader, Tom. Mm-hmm. I just turn left most of the time.
Yeah, okay.
And I hate this recent attack that we've had.
Yeah.
It's terrible, but I think it's bringing to light to the masses of this country how incompetent this Mitt Romney character is,
yeah,
and how dangerous it is for money to be dictating politics in this country.
Yeah, I would submit to you that it's not incompetence, that the big lie strategy is something that's being done intentionally. It is in most of the ads that are being run by Karl Rove's organization, by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They are using the big lie, you know, aggressively, constantly, and they're doing it very intentionally. John, thanks a lot for the call.
Republicans, yeah, they can't handle the fact that the demographics are changing in this country and that they hate Obama because a black man got elected president of this country.
Yeah, and he's sitting in the White House. You know, how dare he?
And
I think there's
absolutely
some truth to that. But I think the racist vote is a relatively small slice of the white vote.
Oh, sure. I agree. I agree with that because I think most Americans are fair-minded people.
Right. And the challenge is, how do you cut through the lies? You've got this incredible media machine, Fox News. It's multi-million-dollar, maybe multi-billion-dollar media machine that has been spreading this, you know, lies and disinformation for years and years and years.
Sure.
It's well chronicled over at MediaMatters.org.
It goes way back to Reagan and the grassroots.
Yep.
You see, you got to hand the
Republicans
credit.
It goes back to Nixon, in fact, I would suggest.
Well, they got into grassroots campaign. They loaded up school boards and library boards.
Yep.
And
no, you're absolutely right.
County
you're...
commissioners, and they've been doing this for 30 years now.
Yep. You got it. You got it, John. Thank you a lot for the call. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator, Senator Bernie Sanders, will be here talking about the important issues of the week and taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Plus, anything goes on Town Hall Friday, your chance to spout off on any topic you want. Plus, we'll have the best of the rest of the news. And my thoughts on the news of the day, we're going to be keeping our eye on what's going on in the Middle East. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.